such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, hello everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. It's a Wednesday, at least that's when I'm recording this. That means it's a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. Father Tom Coy is with you here today. Today I want to focus on the idea of conversion. Conversion. It's something we all need to do. We're in a constant state of conversion. But to help us, looking at others' great conversions, it's a good way to do it. I like converts. They inspire me, and some of them are most unlikely. I want to start with a guy from the French Revolution who I heard his name. When you study a little bit of the French Revolution, I have a very negative memory or attitude about the French Revolution, as you should as well. Even though there's a lot of Americans who will praise the French Revolution without critically looking at some of the great errors, the great mistakes that
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, the great mistakes that were born and were bringing about greater bigger problems. As it were, if there could be any bigger problems, but there certainly are. So in order to get into that, and then hopefully we'll be able to appreciate one way or another where we need to convert and praying for others to convert. One of the great disappointments, of course, or one of the great frustrations in life is many of us are a bit like Saint Monica, who prayed for her son Augustine, and for a long, long time, nothing stirred in Augustine's heart. It's the same way we pray for conversion of others. It's a very, very important thing to pray for them, but it's also very important to try to get them in the right direction, one way or another, right? I think each and every one of us has others that we want to see a conversion, and each one of us should want to convert ourselves deeper and deeper into the faith, right? So this guy from the French Revolution, I've heard of him, but I didn't know he had a great conversion. His name is Georges Jacques Danton. You gotta plug your nose when you pronounce French words, right? Sorry about there, if any French-speaking people, but it does sound a little funny to us English-speaking people. Danton, so you spell it D-A-N-T-O-N, Danton. It's a little bit like Dayton, Ohio, right? So let's think of Dayton, Ohio, but mispronounce it to Danton. Danton, he was one of the really bad dudes of the French Revolution. He helped establish the tribunal that sent thousands of people to their death. He was trying to, number one, topple the the hierarchy, the monarchy. We all probably know that, and that probably doesn't disturb us very much because most of us are not yearning for a monarch anymore. Some people are. Some people say that the mess we're in can only be solved by a monarch. I'm not one of them. I think I take the Aristotelian approach by saying you can have a good monarch, a bad monarch. You can have a good republic, a bad republic. You could have a good oligarchy and a bad oligarchy, or a good democracy or a bad democracy. Each of the forms of government can do well or wreak havoc depending on the people. So anyways, the French Revolution obviously was against the monarchy, but the monarchy was so tied in with Catholicism. Catholicism was so embracing and such a good partner with monarchs that to tear down the monarchy, the French Revolution had to destroy Catholicism. That's kind of the guilt by association kind of thing. It's wrong, and many people assume, it's wrong to assume that because there was a partnership between monarchs and popes and bishops, that they got along fabulously and it was an ideal situation. Anything could be farther from the truth. If you look at history, you could see that bishops and monarchs fought all the time. And the beauty of it is that neither wanted to destroy the other. Each wanted to convert the other. And especially when you had a good bishop or a good pope, they wanted to convert the monarch or the secular rulers to a greater a greater Catholic life, a greater Christian life, a greater love for the poor, a greater respect for law, an aversion to hypocrisy, a simplicity of life, all that good stuff, as best as they could. Of course, famous rich monarchs and noblemen didn't necessarily like that kind of call to conversion, right? So here's an interesting quote from, I'm going to take a lot of these quotes from Warren Carroll's History of Christendom, which is my favorite go-to source of history from a Catholic perspective. He writes, "The French Revolution is likened to Satan, who would eat his young. It was the root of the Russian Revolution. The claim that the revolution ignited because no one could eat bread is highly exaggerated. There was no famine, and England was the only earthly power that abated the French Revolution." I find that kind of an interesting twist, right? The Holy Roman Emperor really couldn't abate the French Revolution. Well, wait a minute. French Revolution happening in the late 1700s and early 1800s, the Holy Roman Empire wasn't much anymore. It was still around, but not nearly as strong as it really could have been. You can and you should think of the Holy Roman Empire as a reign, a partnership between church and state for 1,000 years, roughly from 800 to 1800. So the French Revolution kind of is the end of the Holy Roman Empire. Okay, and so that's a good way to put it into context. And these are good things to reflect on because we're going through in our own time a lot of turmoil, and the question of the relationship between church and state is constantly before us. It's wrapped into almost everything in the news these days. We can see the war going on between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip, as they call it. It's certainly theological in so many ways. I'm frustrated with those who don't see the barbarity, the satanic kind of approach to reforming others, as it were. Maybe you saw in the news one of the pro-Palestinian representatives in the U.S. Congress was praising the phrase from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, which the river is the Jordan River, which marks sort of the western end of the Gaza Strip. West of the Jordan River is Israel, all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. So that chant, from the river to the sea, Palestine be free, is another way of saying we just want to take over and destroy Israel. So, and how they employ what kind of, there's a reign of terror going on. And that's why I think it's valuable to go back in history and look at another reign of terror, that being the great reign of terror that probably coined that phrase in the French Revolution back in the early 1800s, right? So anyways, thousands, of course, were guillotined, and détente, our figure for this moment, was part of the engineering of that. So he helped establish the tribunal, and he was famous for saying, if we have to chop off 200,000 heads, we must do it in order to, save France or something of the sort like that, to renew peace. Of course, didn't bring peace at all. Anyways, a good sort of sense to see what happened. And the irony of that segment in history is here are the legislative, or here are the civil forms of government. We went from the strict monarchy, which is, you know, the divine right of kings, my word is law, and anyone who disagrees with me, off with your head. Okay, so they wanted to get rid of that, the monarchy. What happened in France was, first we were going to establish a national assembly, kind of like a parliament, I guess you could say. A lot of nations and countries have had that. Then they wanted to bring a more, should we say, more populist form of government called the commune. From the commune, it was too loose and too many different voices in the common people to say that we'll get power by giving power to the common man. Always runs into the problem of which common man will shout the loudest or protest the most violently, I guess. Then it came to a legislative assembly, then the national convention, then the republic was established, and then when that really failed and created that terrible civil war going on in France, good old Napoleon came along and said, "We got to bring peace back to this mess of chaos, and so make me emperor, and I'll bring back peace and prosperity." It's the strangest vicious circle in history. In the attempt to bring down the monarchy, you end up with such chaos that only an emperor could solve the problem. That's exactly what happened, sad to say. And I would say because it was not using any any sense of right and wrong that would be, shall we say, objectively recognized on the part of all people. In getting rid of Christianity, Catholicism in particular, it traded in a great tradition of morality and order for a false sense of we all have power. You know, and I'm gonna have to say that that's a little bit of what I'm worried about in our Catholic Church today, the call for synodality, or the call that decisions will be made better when everyone's voice is heard. It leads us to the very difficult situation is when all voices are heard, you will hear a lot of contradictory admonitions, requests. And someone is going to have to say, I'll listen to these people and not those people. It's the same kind of skepticism. It's the same kind of worry we should have whenever we say, oh, it's the people's choice. We must promote what the people want. Well, of course, there's a lot of different kinds of people, and it's just a way of saying we'll pick these people over those people. And so we could see this happening and how terrible of a failure it was with the French Revolution, okay? So anyways, this guy Danton was a friend of Robespierre, another of the great and terrible authors of the Reign of Terror. And the story starts, his conversion starts with the death of his wife. He loved his wife, as good anybody would, let's say. And she died in childbirth, actually. So he runs back to wherever she was and mourns her death very, very deeply in the midst of all this carnage and revolution and everything. You know, and it's interesting to compare or think of, you know, the tragedy of 1,000 heads being lopped off didn't affect him personally, like the loss of his wife, one person, out of natural causes, you could say, over execution. So anyways, okay, I think we're at the point where we got to take our first break. So I'll come back, and I just want to underline the power of God's grace, especially the power of a woman's love for this guy, this crazy guy, Danton, and what happened to him and with him, and how he can and should really inspire us, and how we need some new Dantons in the world today. So anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes. We are on the Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for listening to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyes. I want us to think about the concept of conversion and to renew our hope that even the worst of folks can go through a conversion, and we need that in some very key positions in the world. In Washington, D.C., I think a lot of folks in high elected positions can and should go through a deep conversion. We can and we need some in the Israeli-Gaza conflict, especially those radical jihadists, shall we say, that want to just eliminate the people of Israel, let them live in peace, let them live their, shall we say, prosperous lives alone, not desire to kill them. Anyways, we need lots of big conversions today. Back to the French Revolution. The French Revolution has a lot of stories of good bishops, bad bishops. I think that's another important aspect of studying this part of history. So often there's good bishops and bad bishops. One of the good bishops was a guy by the name of Précy. He was the bishop of Bonlong, a town, I think that's in northern France. This is the time that the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus came upon the world. You know, many of us know and love the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's especially necessary to remember that all the laws and rules, commandments, sacramental policies, etc., come from the heart of a loving God, not a vicious God. Many times it's very easy to paint the Catholic Church as a terrible thing because trying to follow the laws of God, which may not be so easy to follow. And so the enemies of the church can easily say that the laws are vengeful, hateful. So the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus is primarily an attempt to say, Christ is a loving God, and his rules are for our benefit, are for our goodness, not something to hate. So Bishop Précy was one of them, one of the good bishops during that time. There's another bishop by the name of Loménie de Brigné. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it exactly right, but he was a bishop under King Louis XVI, poor guy who got his head chopped off. He was a bishop under Louis XVI. Unfortunately, he was also an atheist. And so when the revolution started, he was all behind the revolution. So what's that you say? Is it possible to have a bishop that's not very faithful, that doesn't believe in God, that's an atheist? Well, not only is it possible, it has happened. Louis XVI, by the way, was only the second monarch to be executed. He was executed January 20th, 1793. So the French Revolution, that was just at the beginning of the French Revolution, and it doesn't really get, Napoleon comes into power in the early 1800s, so a good 20 years or so of real, real vicious war. King James I was the first monarch to be executed by Oliver Cromwell, who was the leader of the English Civil War, one of the English Civil Wars, but probably the most famous or popular Civil War, Oliver Cromwell. So let's see. Another little note about Robespierre, the friend of Danton. He started his revolution like the French Revolution, like so many revolutions, by calling for more attention and more care for the poor. What could be better than that, right? You gain you gain the admiration of the poor. You're going to try to help them. So you got lots of people on your side. I have to say, one of the things I've been sharing with some of my Hispanic friends, especially with the issue today of immigration, and being someone who has a big heart for people in the Hispanic community, yo hablo español, so I know a lot of Hispanics. I speak Spanish, so, and I spend time a little in Mexico. But still, today there is a sense that the Hispanic community, especially, is being used as people are fleeing from their homelands to try to make a better life for themselves, which most people recognize as not an evil thing. We would do it ourselves sometimes, to run away from a place that's terrible to a better place. What's more noble than that in one sense? But I want the new immigrants and I want the Mexican community to appreciate something about the political scene. And I find an angle that catches their attention in a good way, I think. And that is to warn people of voting for those people, those parties that promise everything but deliver little. Just that sense. They know what that is from where they came from. Political figures that promised lots, especially economic improvement, right? Promised a lot of material benefits, but deliver little, except for what can be distributed through free programs, right? And it's those free programs are enough for some folks to feel that they're in the right camp of political people. But I think it's so crucial for people to realize, watch out for the promises of the ruling class. Those who promise too much are not honest. You should feel a kind of being bought, a kind of being taken for granted, of use, being used, as it were. So that's certainly how Robespierre certainly began the French Revolution. And were there poor? Yes, of course there were poor. Was the plan to tear down the monarchy and turn it over to the common man the way to alleviate the poor? It didn't work out that way. Why? Because those who then take power are going to enrich themselves. So it's a vicious circle that way. Part of the beginning of the revolution was that Robespierre also was going to speak against slavery. There should be no slaves in our French colonies. And actually, France didn't have as many colonies as England did, but they had certain colonies. They also said, Robespierre and company, we're going to give women the right to vote. That certainly touches a modern desire for equal dignity or power between man and woman, husband and wife. I have a strange take on that, in the sense that people who, men and women who are mothers and fathers of large families, have a deeper insight into what it takes to govern a community of persons, namely their children, namely their family. They know that the art of compromise has to be developed in certain ways. They know what can or shouldn't be, what shouldn't be compromised on, what principles you have to live by, etc. Anyways, a man and a woman, a father and mother of a big family, they are wiser magistrates than people who are not. They just have the experience that leads to it. Before women were able to go to the election centers and cast their own vote, and the man of the house was the only one who went to the election booth and cast his vote, you would hope and you would think that a man and a woman married together would argue about who the best one was to vote for, and in the process of arguing, the man would then go cast the vote. That obviously, in a good marriage, would work. But you know, who's gonna go fill out the name if you discuss together at home who the best one to vote for, and you both agree? What difference does it make who goes to fill out the ballot? You get the vote. But in some ways, then bad marriages or marriages where husband and wife don't see eye to eye on strategies of keeping a community of persons alive and well, the man's vote will cancel out the woman's vote, and the woman's vote will cancel out the man's vote. So that's just the way it is. And so a person with no, a couple with no children or one or two children will not need the governmental skills, the putting in place policies for the family. Who's going to sit where at dinner table? Who's going to do the garbage and who's going to do the laundry? Where and when will you get to watch TV or use the pool table or the pool or whatever it is you got to divide? Those kinds of things are all the decisions that go into making a smooth family life, right? A larger family will be more in tune with what it takes to keep a large group of people harmonious. And so taking their insights and going to the voting booth, they're going to gravitate toward the politician or the person who has this somewhat similar attitude about policies for groups of people. So my sense is that people who manage a bigger community of persons, their vote should somehow weigh more than someone who's just solitary, as it were, especially because a solitary person will vote for those policies that will help him personally. someone who's going to vote so that his family or her family is going to benefit is not going to be able to vote for policies that just help the individual as much as families. So that's a little sidebar here. Okay. Oh, my goodness. It's time for our next break. And I promised you this beautiful story of conversion of Danton, George Jacques Danton. You're going to be amazed at what happens to him. Anyways, let's take our next break, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes, listening to the Winds of Change. We are WNDZ AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststandschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststandschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here. Thanks for listening to the Winds of Change. Okay, here's this. We're in the middle of the French Revolution, which incredibly changed the course of history and poisoned a lot of the modern way of thinking about the relationship between church and state. Had Robespierre, Danton, all these French revolutionists, had they been deep into their faith, there wouldn't have been the Reign of Terror, and there may have been a smooth transition away from monarchy to democratic republic, you might say. Of course, it's easy for me to say. It is what it is, as we sometimes say. Okay. So Danton, he gets a little prick of conscience after his dear wife dies in childbirth. And as I say, sometimes one person dying who you are close to and you love affects you much more profoundly than 1,000 others that you either don't care about or even consider as enemies. And certainly they saw all the noble people and clergy, bishops, cardinal, etc., as enemies. So his wife Gabrielle dies, and she happens to have a young friend by the name of Alicia Maria, or Alice Marie. I can't remember exactly what family she's from, but anyway, she was a younger and pretty young girl, and Danton, I guess, always did like her. When his wife dies, takes a fancy to the new young woman in his life and wants to marry her. Now, he's in the midst of running the French Revolution. He often went to the Jacobin meetings, places where they gathered to figure out their next move, etc. Anyways, but he's having a little qualm of conscience. He's thinking maybe we chopped off too many heads, even though he was the one who said if it takes 200 heads to roll, let them roll, as it were. And so Robespierre, his partner in crime, starts thinking, what's going on with this guy? So he calls for the arrest of Danton. And let's see. He's not arrested just yet, but he does ask the young girl, Elisa Marie, to marry him. Now, here's where the story is very, very powerful. This is the essence of the story. Elisa Marie says, I will marry you on two conditions. One, you go to confession. And two, we get married by a priest. And both your confession and our wedding must be conducted by a priest who is not in favor of the revolution. Someone who's not buying into the new national church that the revolution was going to establish. And that's a key, a national church, my friends, is such a key idea that we have to really, really understand what it is. Almost every political power wants to have a national church under its power. That's what happened in England. That's what happened in Russia. That's what happened in Italy. That's what happened. It's what's going on in China today. And that's a sad, sad commentary that the national church in China today under the Communist Party is not seen as a modern manifestation of what happened in the French Revolution, in England, in Russia, in Mexico. Look almost everywhere in world history and you'll find the great despots, the great tyrants will be happy to have a religion as long as it's under their power, because religion does gain a lot of popularity. People, there's a natural affinity to being religious, and so you're not going to just wipe out religion, but you can wipe out religious opposition to yourself. Elisa Marie asked Danton to go to confession. She finds a priest who's not with the revolution. As a matter of fact, this priest was a Sulpician, Pierre somebody, Father Pierre, I think it was. Anyways, he had to hide in an attic as the Revolutionary Guard was going around collecting people for the guillotine. He knew they were coming. He couldn't escape. He saw loose boards in the ceiling. He climbed into the ceiling and stayed there for days, I think it was, and before he escaped. Anyways, so he had his credentials as being a priest, not in harmony with the revolution. So he goes to confession. Danton goes to confession to this priest. We find out about that confession, not because Danton went around trumpeting it, but after Danton dies and at the end of this priest's life, he writes his memoirs and he says that he heard Danton's confession. He doesn't say what he confessed, of course. He wouldn't do that. But the fact that Danton went to confession was a major thing. So and they get married. One of the other conditions of Elisa Marie was that we get out of Paris for a long honeymoon. Let's go to the country. She figured, get him out of this cesspool, this hell, this reign of terror. And maybe I'll be able to turn his mind, his heart, his head. And she must have done that. You know, it's a beautiful reflection on what a good woman can do to a man whose head is spinning around, shall we say, in the wrong direction. It's equally true to see what a good man could do to a woman who's going in the wrong direction. But this case, it was she who got Detang to second-guess his role in the French Revolution. So they, after their long honeymoon in the country, they come back and they're in Paris. And he doesn't show up at the Jacobin meetings so much. You know, where's Danton? How come he's not here with us plotting our next move? Who else to kill? And he says, well, you know, maybe we killed too many people. Robespierre is like, you got to be kidding. Are you turning against the revolution? And he goes, no, the revolution. I'm still for the revolution. But he's... Robespierre calls for the arrest of Danton. Danton isn't worried. He says, okay, I'm going to go stand trial to the tribunal board that I myself created. They're not going to send me to the guillotine. I'll be fine. He's trying to convince his new wife that no, things will be fine. Unfortunately, Robespierre threatens the panel more so than Détan's charm. And so Détan is sentenced to the guillotine. It's amazing. And he calls on God. It's kind of the same spirit, if you know the great movie classic, the great novel, A Tale of Two Cities, where the hero, or if you can call him, he starts off. It was the best of times, and it was the greatest of times, and the one going off to the guillotine says, "I give my life for my nation, for my God." Anyways, he had this great conversion. You know, it might be, I got to double check on that, it might actually be Danton that great novel is written about. I don't think it's him exactly. We'll have to look at that. Any of you listening, check it out and see. Let me know. So, and as he's in that little cart, as they're driving him off, he sees the priest walking kind of along, but the priest, of course, isn't dressed like a priest. And the priest has his red freedom cap on. You know, the freedom cap would be to show that he's with the revolution. You know, it's just kind of his sign that he's with the revolution. Is that... any reference or similarity to the red hats that we saw walking around in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, not long ago? I'll leave that to your discretion. But this priest with his little red freedom hat on doesn't want to give himself away or so, but they exchange glances, and he nods to... Détan is the last to be executed. He's being forced to see so many of the others that he knew be killed beforehand. He says to the executioner afterwards, "Lift high my head and show it to the crowd. It is worth seeing." Something to those effect. So he dies repentant. He offers his life in expiation for all his sins. And can you say, if not for the love of that precious wife, I've got to say so. So it just shows that conversions can happen even in the strangest places. We should never give up praying for conversion of even the worst of sinners. There are a lot of people converting to Catholicism that you wouldn't think of. Do tune into, you know, the greatest source for listening to great convert stories, I think, is the Coming Home Network on EWTN. You know, great. I tune into that and always am blessed by the stories that people tell. I just listened to one, although it wasn't on the Coming Home Network. He probably will be, but a guy by the name of Keith Nestor, a Protestant pastor, youth pastor, and then also a senior pastor, who became Catholic, especially meditating on history. It was his meditating on history, and one of the parts of his story that he told was that when he was in his junior pastor, his senior pastor says, "Well, why don't you give a series of talk on the Reformation?" And Keith says, "Do you really want me to?" And he goes, "Yeah." And he really lays it on. And he uses scripture left and right to show really how Catholicism had the upper hand and was promoting scripture much more faithfully than his denomination was. And his denomination was going off the rails. And you probably heard that Jordan Peterson's wife, Tammy, converted. I think she was healed from cancer, if not completely. We gotta pray for her. We pray for Jordan Peterson. They're just doing a lot of wonderful things in society today. As a matter of fact, I just finished a book on the family row. The family row. It's a long story of the pro-life movement. It's worth a read about how Norma McCorvey, who was the woman that the pro-choice politicians corralled into becoming Roe. She had to go through her whole life being Roe, and it was she had an incredibly messed up family life. She went through lesbianism, and she had three illegitimate, I think they were all girls, three daughters. Anyways, the book, The Family Rose, it was a very fascinating read. She then becomes Christian through the Operation Rescue Gang. She felt exploited by the pro-choice gang that just wanted to parade her around. Use her for the advancement of stronger and more dominant pro-choice legislation and all the rest. And actually, she never even had an abortion. She had her children because the first child that eventually grew up and lived in Seattle, Washington, she didn't want to meet her birth mother. She didn't want to meet Norma McCorvey and all the different stories about, I don't want to be associated with that woman. And then she's like any adopted or person seeking their biological mother. She does meet Jane Roe. Anyways, it's a fascinating story. Norma McCorvey not only becomes baptized as a Protestant, then because she felt used and abused by much of her new Christian family, and partly by the influence of one of my friends, a pastor by the name of Daniel Vincent, she becomes Catholic. Actually, Daniel Vincent was a Protestant pastor, a part of Operation Rescue, but Daniel Vincent, after doing his Baptist service in his little Texas Baptist church, would drive some 45 minutes to a, I think it was a Benedictine monastery, some parish maybe. Anyways, he'd sit in the back and attend Mass, and it was growing on him. He invites Norma McCorvey to attend Mass with him, and he becomes Catholic. She becomes Catholic. Daniel Vincent's wife didn't become Catholic right away. She was kind of upset. Being the daughter of a minister, you know, those family ties create the obstacle of why would your devotion or embracing of a religious doctrine or morality, why would that hurt my family? Why would, anyways, Pastor Daniel Vincent's wife does eventually become Catholic too, actually, after the struggle, as it were. So we'll see. Anyway, so I hope you appreciate that this dive into conversion. You and I, we all have to appreciate the need for conversion in our own hearts and minds. We're going to be entering into the season of Advent soon in preparation for Christmas. That always means prepare for a coming of Christ once again. Some of us at our little parish here, St. James, just started a 33-day preparation for consecration to the Blessed Mother, according to the beautiful words of St. Maximilian Kolbe. So pray yourself, my friends. Do make some kind of little plan for yourself. God's not done with you yet, and he's not done with everybody else in our lives. We use our days, we use our time in this world to grow as deeply and as fervently as we can. There's always something more we can grow in. And look out for the errors and the silly spirituality, the mistakes that are around us. I'm gonna end this show with a thought for the next show. The problem of nominalism, which is being reborn even through leaders in our church. We have to be aware of the evils of the return of nominalism. Anyways, God bless you for listening. I am Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to The Winds of Change on WNDZ. We are AM 750.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.